We will continue to impose costs until the junta removes its stranglehold on democracy.
Conflicts between protesters and Myanmar's military escalate. It's Monday, March 29th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, reeling in illegal Chinese fishing. Comparing COVID vaccines. Indonesia's pandemic child marriage. Business in Asia. Flying on another planet. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Defense chiefs from a dozen countries, including the United States, issued a rare joint statement condemning Myanmar's use of lethal force against pro-democracy, unarmed people. The statement said, "A professional military follows international standards for conduct and is responsible for protecting, not harming, the people it serves." The statement released after the violence in the country on Saturday is backed by defense chiefs from Australia, Britain, Canada, Denmark, Germany, Greece, Italy, Japan, the Netherlands, South Korea, and New Zealand. More than 100 people were killed Saturday as the military junta, backed by police, continues a brutal countrywide crackdown on pro-democracy protesters on Armed Forces Day, marking the deadliest day of protests since the February 1st military coup. In reaction to Saturday's killings, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres strongly condemned the killings. Myanmar Now news site reported late Saturday a nationwide death toll of at least 114. The U.S. Treasury Department has issued new sanctions imposing penalties on two companies with ties to Myanmar's military. As VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson tells us, U.S. lawmakers are calling for more sanctions against oil and gas companies to help prevent a civil war in Myanmar.
Demonstrators out again in the streets in Myanmar Thursday as the U.S. imposes new penalties against the military for the February 1st coup.
"We impose sanctions on the two largest military-owned conglomerates, Myanmar Economic Corporation, MEC, and Myanmar Economic Holdings Limited, MEL, which will directly target the junta's revenue streams and personal fortunes, and demonstrates that we will continue to impose costs until the junta removes its stranglehold on democracy."
Earlier this week, a 7-year-old girl shot when soldiers broke into her home in Mandalay. She was one of 286 people local activist groups estimate have been killed by the military since the coup. And the conflict is escalating, experts warn U.S. lawmakers.
"There is a growing pressure on the opposition leadership to defend the people of Burma by taking up arms against the Burmese military. I understand the pull to go down this path, but I believe that such a path would lead to a disastrous outcome for the people of Burma, with untold numbers of civilians caught in a protracted, bloody civil war."
Possible options to avoid that civil war include targeted sanctions against oil and gas companies.
"More must be done to deny the army its economic lifeline and to deny it the weapons of war."
And the situation on the ground cannot change, lawmakers said, without international cooperation.
"There's almost no sanction that we're going to put in place that's going to change the Burmese military from the course they're on. But China has the capacity to do that, maybe India to a lesser extent, but China certainly does."
This week, the Myanmar military released 600 of the nearly 3,000 detained protesters. But de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other members of the civilian government are still detained, while journalists are repressed.
"We are doing all we can to support independent journalism within Burma. The junta also continues to restrict access to the internet and online communication tools. Days after the coup, for instance, the military ordered internet service providers to block access to Facebook, Wikipedia, Twitter, and Instagram."
U.S. officials told lawmakers Thursday they had also redirected nearly $42 million in assistance to ensure American aid benefits the Burmese people instead of the military. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Much more on this developing story can be found by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook and at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. World Bank and Asian Development Bank freeze funds to Myanmar to shun junta. Top military officers from a dozen countries strongly condemn Myanmar crackdown. Five killed, dozens injured in anti-Modi protests in Bangladesh. Afghan Taliban threatened to target U.S. and NATO troops if U.S. misses exit deadline. Pakistan struggles to contain third COVID-19 wave. Expanded coverage of these stories and so much more can be found daily on our website at voanews.com and check out our Facebook page at VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Biden administration says it is concerned about illegal fishing by Chinese vessels. China leads the illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing industry with a fleet of thousands around the world. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has the story.
Illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, or IUUF, is a huge industry, and China is its biggest player, according to a ranking by the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. Thousands of Chinese fishing boats, many subsidized by Beijing, fish in territorial waters of countries in Africa, Southeast Asia, and South America, depleting fish stocks and hurting local economies. Beijing denies the allegation.
China is the largest country. It provides the largest amount of subsidies for harmful fishing. By a large factor globally.
Last May, the Trump administration issued an executive order to combat IUUF and called on the international community to stand up against China's illegal fishing. The Biden administration is likely to continue the effort, telling VOA it considers combating IUUF a foreign policy priority.
It is an issue of overfishing in certain parts of the world. It is something our national security team is certainly watching and following closely.
As governments try to deter illegal fishing, skirmishes are common, including this incident late last year when the Ecuadorian Navy opened fire on the Chinese fishing vessels off the Galapagos Islands. Other governments, including Indonesia, have taken punitive measures, capturing and sinking Chinese fishing boats. The World Trade Organization failed to reach a deal to cut IUUF subsidies, such as those provided by Beijing, by the December 2020 deadline. Earlier this month, the new WTO Director General promised to push through the deal.
It's been 20 years, and 20 years is enough. That's my slogan. Now we have to get it done.
More than 13% of U.S. imports caught at sea in 2019 were derived from IUUF, according to a March report by the U.S. International Trade Commission.
That's that total amount of illegal fish coming into the U.S., well over $2 billion.
IUUF is also a human rights issue. Aid groups have documented examples of modern slavery in which workers are subjected to harsh conditions, low pay, and inadequate food and water for months or even years at sea. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
China announced tit-for-tat sanctions against two Americans, a Canadian, and a rights advocacy body in response to sanctions imposed last week by the two countries over Beijing's treatment of Uyghurs. Two members of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Gail Manchin and Tony Perkins, Canadian Member of Parliament Michael Chong, and a Canadian Parliamentary Committee on Human Rights are prohibited from entering mainland China, Hong Kong, and Macau, according to the Chinese Foreign Ministry. At least 1 million Uyghurs and people from other mostly Muslim groups have been held in camps in northwestern Xinjiang, according to rights groups, who accuse authorities of forcibly sterilizing women and using forced labor. Happening now in Asia, two suspected suicide bombers blew themselves up outside a Catholic church in Indonesia during a Palm Sunday Mass, wounding at least 19 people. A police spokesperson told reporters the suicide bombers were intercepted by security at the gate to the church compound, and then the bomb exploded. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to start the week off with you on VOA Asia. In the global race against emerging variants of COVID-19, experts say it is imperative to reach herd immunity quickly by vaccinating as many people as possible. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports on the range of vaccines that are being used in the United States and elsewhere.
In the United States, three vaccines are being used: Pfizer-BioNTech, Moderna, and a recent addition from Johnson & Johnson. U.S. health experts say all have been rigorously vetted. There are some differences in delivery and some debate about their efficacy rates.
It gets very confusing because the J&J, which comes in at 66%, people go, well, that's 66%, whereas Pfizer and Moderna are each 95%. Well, shouldn't I go with Moderna or Pfizer? Then the answer is, well, look, the J&J field trials were done in a different point in time when there were variants. So when you're looking at your top line goal is block severe disease and death, they all, those three, perform exceptionally well. So grab one.
The British-Swedish AstraZeneca vaccine developed with Oxford University researchers has been used worldwide. But recently, some European countries temporarily suspended use of the vaccine over fears of a link to blood clots. After a review last week by the World Health Organization's Vaccine Safety Panel, the vaccine was once again given the go-ahead.
We urge countries to continue using this important vaccine. The AstraZeneca vaccine is especially important because it accounts for more than 90% of the vaccines being distributed through COVAX.
COVAX is a WHO-led initiative to help ensure equitable distribution of the vaccines, especially to low-income countries. In general, there are several types of vaccines. Some are developed from older technologies, such as so-called inactivated or live-weakened vaccines, while others, such as the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, rely on newer methods, such as the messenger RNA. Public health expert William J. Moss explains.
The messenger RNA and the adenovirus vector vaccines work a little differently. Instead of injecting the protein or the whole virus, basically we're injecting the genetic recipe so that our own cells make the spike protein, and then we develop an immune response to that.
There are a number of other vaccines that have been developed around the world, including Russia's Sputnik V and a number of others by China. While they do have an important role, it's crucial they go through the full data collection processes, says Moss.
One of the challenges, I'd say, with those, both the Sputnik and some of the Chinese vaccines, is that they were rolled out in some populations before we really had all the phase three, trial.
But a number of countries are using the Russian and Chinese vaccines, with health officials in some nations taking the first jab themselves to reassure their populations. Recently, Sputnik V did provide additional data, as has one of the Chinese vaccine companies. So far, their track records have been positive. Given the challenges of a global pandemic, having a broad portfolio of vaccines is a good thing, say health experts.
One of the biggest obstacles that we faced is the manufacturing capacity. We need 14 to 15 billion doses of vaccines in order to get to herd immunity within this entire world. That's a staggering number.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Chinese and Iranian foreign ministers signed a 25-year cooperation agreement between the two allies in a ceremony carried live on state television. China, one of Iran's largest trading partners and longstanding ally, agreed in 2016 to boost bilateral trade by more than 10 times to $600 billion over a decade. You'll find this and more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, every year, according to the United Nations, an estimated 12 million girls are wed before the age of 18. The numbers had been dropping in Indonesia, but that was before the COVID-19 pandemic. Eva Mesriva has more in this report, narrated by Ahadian Utama.
Data from the Indonesian government recorded that 64,000 girls were married off during the COVID pandemic, more than double than the previous year. This increase is disappointing to anti-child marriage advocate Rasmina, who, like many Indonesians, goes by only one name. She was married when she was only 13 years old.
Of course I'm sad. I wish there were no more child marriages. I'm asking parents to not let their daughters to be victims of child marriage. Let me be the only one who had to marry when I was young.
Rasmina lives in the Indonesian province of West Java. Along with two other women, she was rescued by the Indonesian Coalition to End Child Marriage. For years, this organization had been working to get the nation's highest court to enforce a law setting the minimum legal age for marriage for boys and girls at 19 years old. After the court approved the motion in 2018, the House amended the law.
When the court agreed to make changes to the law, I was very happy because my hard work is not for nothing. And I did this all for my children and for the children of Indonesia.
Once the law was changed, the government working with NGOs, women activists, and academic pushed for its enforcement. Child marriages dropped, but they began increasing again, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. Activists say cash-strapped parents begin using a loophole in the law that allows them to marry off a child as young as 16 if they ask for an exemption. The numbers of marriages made possible through exemption jumped from 13,000 cases in 2017 to 64,000 cases in 2020. Advocates are working with communities and government to address the loophole and provide legal training to villagers who they say are key in the effort. Activists say they are expanding programs to prevent child marriage, and the government has implemented the Child Friendly Village program to combat violence against children, including child marriage. In addition to that, the government has also implemented the Child Friendly Village program to help eliminate violence against children, including child marriage. The government aimed to cut the rate of child marriage to less than 8.5% by 2024.
No more child marriages. Let me be the only one who had to marry when I was young. Stop child marriage.
For VOA's Eva Mazrieva, in Jakarta, I'm Ahadian Utama, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Indonesia's most volatile volcano, Mount Merapi, was erupting again, releasing plumes of ash high into the air and sending streams of lava and debris down its slopes. No casualties were reported. The volcano is on a densely populated Java island. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's time for VOA Asia Business Scene. Here's Josh Nist.
In a densely populated city with notoriously high rents, Hong Kong's musicians are used to playing on cramped stages. However, very few venues match up to the unorthodox style of Yung Hing Lung noodles. The 300-square-foot restaurant recently hosted a jazz band to perform using dining tables as music stands, with the double bass player squeezed into the space where the noodles are usually cooked. Due to the strict social distancing restrictions in place, the event did not have a live audience, so the entire performance was streamed online while the organizers asked for donations from the hundreds of viewers who tuned in. Justin Su, the double bassist of the band, was the brain of the event.
There. So I had been eating there for many months and have befriended the boss. And the boss had found out, you know, what I do and how we are being affected by the pandemic. And so he offered it if he could help in anything, like...
Unlike the high-end hotels and jazz bars the band usually performs at, the noodle restaurant carries a distinct traditional vibe, with most of its decor the exact same from the 1970s. Although live streaming their performances only generates a fraction of what a typical performance brings in, the band hopes to make live stream something that can help support Hong Kong artists. ...46-year-old designer Lakshmi Menon found a way to not only help people in need during the pandemic, but also help cutting down pollution in the environment. Based in a small workshop in Kerala, India, a group of women is braiding personal protective equipment, also known as PPE, into mattresses for those in need. India has massively increased its production of PPE, including suits and face masks, which in turn has also increased the volume of waste in the country. That is when Menon created the Shaya mattress, which is easy to carry and weighs just 3 kilograms. Menon also has taken the company's concept globally, as she hopes to inspire others from around the world.
We are also giving online training to many people in many countries. Actually, we had been getting calls from Brazil, Australia, South Korea, Africa, and we already have a website called shaya.in. The demo videos, everything is given out there. So anybody wish to replicate it can just visit, and it's an open source sort of. So anybody can, they are free to copy our design.
The mattresses, however, are not for sale. Instead, they are donated to people in need through various non-government organizations. For Business Scene, I'm Josh Nist.
NASA's Wright Brothers moment on Mars comes complete with a piece of Earth history on board. Plus, the space agency eyes its return to the moon, and a record-setting explorer sets another. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us the week in space.
NASA this week previewed the Martian launch of its Ingenuity helicopter. It rides aboard the agency's Mars rover Perseverance. NASA Planetary Science Division Director Lori Glaze says the future of Mars research may depend on Ingenuity.
Ingenuity will open new possibilities and will spark questions for the future about what we could accomplish with an aerial explorer. Could we image areas not visible from space or that a rover couldn't reach, like shadowed craters with seasonal water flow?
Glaze adds the aerial mission could shape how drones support future missions with humans. Also having made the trip from Earth to Mars is a small piece of fabric from the plane the Wright brothers used in their historic first flight in 1903. Now, less than 120 years later from that historic flight, NASA will attempt launching a craft on another planet. Ingenuity's first flight is not expected before April 8th. On Earth, meanwhile, NASA completed an 8-minute hot fire test in Mississippi. The test of NASA's Space Launch System simulates a trip from the ground to orbit. The agency cut short a similar test in January, but with this week's success, NASA moves closer to another manned flight to the moon as part of the Artemis program. Finally this week, an exploration of the Mariana Trench, the deepest point on Earth. Richard Garriott just finished a trip there.
It is almost 11,000 meters of seawater deep. That is deeper than Mount Everest is high above sea level, by a couple thousand meters at least.
This is Richard Garriott. I'm here with Victor Vescovo. We are in the submarine limiting factor.
Garriott and research partner Victor Vescovo collected water samples to study, among other things, microplastic contamination. Garriott is the only person to have been to the Mariana Trench, the North and South Poles, and the International Space Station. Bon voyage. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us online on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank you for joining us today, and we thank our VOA Asia team, including Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.